The market analysis segment is coming your way in seconds. I'm Josh Bittner, producer at Market to Market. Thanks for listening. Enjoy.
This is the Friday, July 10, 2020 version of the market analysis segment for Market to Market. Much of the week's gains were wiped out in the final session following the USDA report, with the exception of wheat. For the week, September wheat jumped 42 cents or 8.5%, while the nearby corn contract declined 6 cents. Weather concerns and higher ending stocks weighed on the soy complex. The August soybean contract fell 4 cents. August soybean meal shed $3.60 per ton. December cotton gained $1.37 per hundredweight. In the dairy parlor, August Class 3 milk futures kept the rally going with a $1.87 gain. A mixed week in the livestock sector. August cattle lost a nickel. August feeders declined 15 cents, and the August lean hog contract added 83 cents. In the currency markets, the U.S. dollar index dropped 68 ticks. August crude increased 20 cents per barrel. COMEX gold topped $1,800 with a $12.30 gain per ounce. And the Goldman Sachs commodity index improved more than 5 points to finish at 335.95. Joining us now to give us some insight are two of our regular market analysts, Dan Huber and Matthew Bennett. Gentlemen, good to see you both. Dan, Matt, hi.
Oh, hi, very good. Thanks. Good to see you.
You just can't talk at the same time. I'll try to play traffic cop. How about that?
Okay.
All right.
Okay.
That'll
very
be good.
Very good.
All right, Dan, we're going to start with you. Give us a take
sure. On
today's report, and we'll do the same with you, Matt. But Dan, a tweet. How would you sum up USDA's moves today?
You know, certainly nothing surprising in any of the reports that came out. In fact, I guess I would say the only surprise out there was their adjustments to the Brazilian soybean crop, raising that 3 million metric tons, I mean, which really puts them far and away above about anybody else in the industry out there that's looking for that. But, you know, the numbers, like you say, all fell within expectations. Should not have been a shock. My tweet of the corn reaction was it was payback. You know, I think the large speck was punished after the acres report. They covered over 50,000 contracts last week, and I think it was kind of payback time. So they probably came and reaccumulated some of those short positions again here today.
Matt, what was your tweet on today's report?
I think ultimately, you know, with corn, I mean, obviously numbers came in pretty close to what everyone was thinking. So you look at the screen and you think it's going to be a non-event. Let's just kind of take a long lunch and go home for the week. But you wouldn't want to do that because then you turn around and this market is down double digits. And so a very poor reaction to what I would call an average report.
Poor reaction to an average report. I will talk corn in a minute, but we first have to start with wheat, guys. Dan, there's a TV show they're filming not too far from you called Chicago Wheat. That was quite the leader this week. What's going on?
Well, you know, really, wheat's been a leader for almost a couple weeks here now. And I think if there's any irony in all of this, I mean, if you look at wheat, it probably, without question, has the most bearish fundamental setup, both domestically and worldwide. You know, we have ample stocks, you know, some of the highest stocks to uses ratios we've seen in years and years, and yet we continue to rally. And I think, you know, one, I always look at wheat as to be a leader. I think you really have to get the wheat market moving before you can stimulate corn. And I think that is probably a positive sign. But, you know, little by little, we keep getting reports of issues. You know, we know there's been some problems in Russia and Ukraine this year. We know there's been an issue in Argentina with wheat production, still very dry there. I guess the locusts aren't going to eat everything up. And then, of course, there was additional stories this week about acreage problems in South America. You know, France did not get up to a good start or what's going to look like a good acreage or a good production number. And, of course, here in the U.S., we're at, you know, century lows on wheat acreage. So, you know, I think all of this, you know, even though the fundamental picture doesn't say we should be moving up in the wheat, I think, you know, it's just one little piece after another that keeps falling into place. And I think a thin market, you know, no real harvest activity really pressuring prices, and the path of least resistance became to the upside.
Matt, are you buying anything on the quality discussion of this? I mean, there's the discussion of the food grade. Wheat is a problem, and that's driving. I mean, Kansas City hit three-week highs, and Chicago had a rally.
Well, I mean, you know, as far as the direction of the market. I think Dan covered the bases very well. I think the interesting thing, the funds are sitting here covering shorts like it's going out of style whenever you're looking at the wheat market, and it's because of all these various issues. As far as quality is concerned, you know, I mean, you hear talks of quality, but bottom line, whenever you take the wheat market up 44 cents in a week, I mean, obviously you've got people that are wanting to own this wheat. I agree, though. It's so hard for me to understand wheat at times whenever you start talking stocks to usage ratios as compared to, for instance, corn and beans. I mean, they're just gargantuan. And so to me, yeah, I mean, stocks to use are going to be a little bit smaller than what we've seen the last couple, 3 years. But are they going to be tight in any way, shape, or form? Absolutely not.
The Matt, are you looking to, I mean, you look, we're not quite to April marks on this contract. Are we looking to make a sale right now? Are we holding because the fundamentals don't match, or the technicals and the fundamentals are not matching up here? Are you selling anything either nearby or deferred?
Are you talking wheat still?
Wheat. I still want to finish wheat.
Yeah, I mean, to me, whenever you get that sort of a rally, absolutely. You know, I mean, the thing is that that doesn't mean you step in and sell all of it. But by all means, anytime you see a 40-cent rally in a week, I guess one thing I always say is a rally is not a rally unless you step in and sell some. Because as we've seen, you know, I mean, look at the corn market just today, for instance. Most people wouldn't have expected to see what we saw happen there. And so I definitely don't want to take anything for granted with the wheat market. To me, it's the moodiest of the top three, and so I really struggle, in my opinion, to ignore a 40-plus-cent rally.
Dan, you talked about poor Richard's thinking when it came to the wheat market. We just didn't think it was going to go any lower, but it also pulled the corn market along. Could you say Ben Franklin's approach to this maybe played in the corn factor, or what's going on with corn?
Well, I think so. You know, and again, I... like I say, I think what we saw today was probably a victim of a end of the week, not enough volume in there that we it was easy for the buyers to kind of step aside with that news in there. But you know, I do kind of tend to think that one of the overlooked factors, be it wheat, corn, and beans to a lesser extent, is when we start looking at those global stocks, where are they sitting? You know, and when you look at the ending stocks projected for this coming year. In wheat, 52% of that's in China. In corn, 62% of that's in China. So, I mean, that's a product that's going to stay there. So it's really not necessarily as overburdensome as what they look like on face value here. So, you know, and all of these, and I certainly agree. Yeah, when you get a 40-cent rally, you have to reward that. That said, looking at some of the very long-term technical setup here in corn and wheat both, they really just seem to be turning the corner. And I'm not going to sit here and say bullish, bullish, bullish. But on the same token, I think we maybe got a little more time on our hands to see this move out, maybe get a little more weather under our belt before we really see these markets totally exhaust themselves this year.
Okay, Matt, you get to answer the question that Justin in Ithaca, Michigan's asking, and it's the elephant in the room when it comes to corn and soybeans, and to an extent, wheat. He's asking, with recent years of dry conditions or wet springs that the market thought would hurt yields but ended up surprisingly good yields, will the market have a short-term memory and move higher if we're dry and hot conditions continue, or will they be more resistant to another weather scare?
Yeah, that's a great question, because I think all of us that are in production agriculture understand the genetics are just phenomenal. I mean, we've been able to withstand really harsh conditions. You know, like a year like last year, most of us thought yield was not going to come in where it did, because bottom line, we had a terrible spring. You come in this year, though, and whenever we're looking at what we're talking about right now, you're talking about excessive heat. And so some of the forecasts just on Thursday were showing 100 degrees for 2 or 3 days, with the nighttime temperatures not getting below 75 for several days in a row in the I states, especially Illinois and Indiana. And so to me, that sort of a forecast, if it comes to pass, it certainly is going to have an impact on production, especially whenever a large part of that area is trying to pollinate, because most people are talking about shooting tassels this week. Right here in central Illinois, we're shooting tassels. We're trying to pollinate right now, which is a little bit concerning whenever we've got a fairly warm wind going on today. But bottom line is, I think that the market will react if you come in on Sunday night with an ominous forecast. Are you going to get back everything you lost this week? If the forecast comes to pass, absolutely.
Dan, if the weekend rains don't materialize, and like Matt says, continued hot and dry into next week, Sunday night's opening into Monday's opening, is this thing going higher or lower?
Oh, I think if we miss the range, we're going to move higher. You know, it is a granted, we believe, I think that the trade as a whole believes that the corn is kind of bulletproof. You know, it's hard to throw anything at it that's really going to destroy it. But that doesn't mean you can't start trimming a half to a bushel and a half off of there. And with 92 million acres planted instead of what, you know, just a few weeks ago was perceived going to be 95 or 97 million acres, you know, there's not as much room for error out there. So, no, I think we move higher. Plus, add in the fact that even though they covered a fair amount of their shorts, we still have a very large spec short position. And, of course, that kind of feeds on itself. If they one starts to get out, you know, that pushes into the next, and that can become kind of a self-fulfilling move as well. So,
are either of you making sales on Monday morning?
I would, Matt? Look at, again, if we push back up. You know, I mean, if we're back up into the ranges we traded this week in December corn against that 360 area, between 360 and 380, I'm a seller of December corn.
Matt, what are you?
Yeah, I am as well. And I think this is a precarious time for a producer, because a lot of producers are going into, for instance, this weekend without a whole lot of knowing what their production is going to look like. If they don't have full soil moisture profile, it's precarious to sell 30, 40 cents below your spring insurance price. In fact, it's just flat out dangerous. And so we come in here on Monday and we rally sharply. Like Dan said, maybe we break 363 next week with a hot, dry forecast. We do, and we see what's on the other side of there. I think that you could see a little bit more buying come in. Absolutely, we're going to be taking risk off the table.
Matt, what are you doing for beans? Same thing?
You know, with beans, I guess I'm a little more friendly. Whenever I look at the supply and demand balance sheet for beans, I guess it's a whole lot more snug than what corn is. You know, right now we're assuming about a 50 bushel yield. It gets you 4.25. Yes, we crept up from last month. But at the same time, if you start to trim a little bit of yield off beans, and a lot of the forecasters are talking about this pattern that we're in is going to only intensify as we move into August, which makes sense because August is typically a hotter, drier month. And so, you know, I guess for beans, I'm not in any huge hurry here. I've got to think that you're going to have the opportunity to maybe build a little bit of a bullish case in here.
Dan, what about you? Do you buy, I mean, beans maybe a couple of weeks behind the corn when it comes to the vital part. Mm-hmm. Do you think soybean has a chance to run up like Matt's talking about?
Well, I believe so. You know, and again, yeah, I think he's right on the money. We do not have really that dramatic of a, you know, if anything, we're reducing our carryout in the next year pretty substantially. So I don't think seeing November beans up into the 925, 950 range takes a lot of imagination at all. I think that could happen with any kind of a weather scare. You know, interestingly enough, too, I was going to point out earlier in the year, Dr. Cadornier made a comment about, you know, oftentimes, you know, and he's watched South American, North American crops for many, many years. And he said, you know, it's interesting that so often when we see a problem in South America, we tend to have a very similar kind of problem in North America on the next growing season. You know, and so far he's been pretty astute in that observation. So, I mean, those are the same kind of problems we're seeing, particularly in the southern reaches of the growing belt.
All right, let's get to the livestock. We'll discuss cotton in Market Plus because we've had some significant moves in that market, Dan and Matt. But, Matt, I'll start with you on cattle here. We're seeing a widening basis. Why?
Well, I mean, you know, with cattle, bottom line is you've seen a fair amount of strength in here lately. But at the same time, they're talking about margins are actually fairly decent, you know, for cattle. But bottom line, to me, there's not a lot of cattle in my, I mean, you're seeing that people are not actually bidding. There's some cattle that are no bid. And so I don't think that there's I guess there's not as much enthusiasm right now. At the same time, it's very interesting to see the board moving a little bit higher. I'm not bearish cattle by any stretch of the imagination, especially farther out. But when you're talking about big supplies up front, weights were down this week, thank goodness. But these heavy weights, in my opinion, have to factor in whenever you're talking about, basis or margin or however you want to put it.
Dan, we talked about the number, some of the economy issues that are starting to form with the reinfections. Is that playing at all, you think, in the cattle market about what the consumer is going to do? Vote silently with the wallet and close it a little bit here and conserve some cash.
probably more so on the cash market than the futures. Futures, again, have responded a little bit positively here as of late, but I think so. I think people are, again, this fear about going outside again, this fear about getting it together in groups and picnics and whatever the case may be. And I think the industry is playing it pretty cautious out there on what happens if we run with another a big problem on transporting the meat around. And, and again, I don't think anybody would argue we have a major issue totally in the meat industry in this country with just too few packers out there. And until that changes, the cattle hogs, either one, we're at the mercy of that packing industry, and it's not a good position to be in.
There's few lots, and what lots we do have with various owners, they're pretty full right now. They're still trying to feed. Mm-hmm. Dan, we hear about this wave of animal that's going to come in the fall that maybe was held back. Do you still see, Matt just talked about lower weights on these live cattle, but on the feeders, are you seeing or hearing about slowing of some of these feeder numbers? Are we spreading them out, or how are they getting to market?
I think spread out is probably the best term. They did and could leave them out on pasture a little longer than they needed to. So it's but yes, the animals aren't going away. Ultimately they have to come in there. You can back them up only so much, and they're going to come into the feedlots once that space is available. So the saving grace, of course, has, up to this point, has been the relatively cheap price of corn. If you start putting a change on that with the weather scare, that's not going to be very friendly to that feeder market either.
Matt, the August hog contract went above $50 for a short time this week. It did finish higher on the week, but that hog market has been much cheaper compared to beef. Is this a buying opportunity for people right now?
That's a tough call. They say margins are pretty good, cut out values fairly strong. But I guess in my opinion on this hog market, I can't get super friendly in here. This time of year, no matter what meat you're talking, I think demand is usually pretty good. But again, as Dan was suggesting, people going out to eat, there's a lot of fear, a lot of issues on who's going to open up, where are you going to be able to even go. You guys know how it is. My wife and I tried to figure out where we're going to go eat. We got to figure out who's going to be open and who's not, whether they're open just inside, outside. If it's 95 degrees out, I don't want to go too bad and sit outside. So, I think that there's a lot of demand issues, I think, that I still want to kind of sort through. I guess if I was going to compare, I'm a little more friendly to the cattle market than what I would be hogs, especially long term.
Okay. Dan, same question. What do you think about hogs comparison to beef?
Well, I would tend to agree. 6% more hogs on feed right now. And granted, some of the farrowing intentions numbers were a little less than they anticipated, but that can still change. And so much of the industry is on packer contracts, so they know exactly what's coming in. It's pretty difficult to, unless we see something really, really shape up in the export business moving forward, it's pretty tough to paint a good picture of the hogs. I think you go ahead and look out into the summer months. You look out to those June, July, August of next year, which are already in that 70-plus cent range. And producers, if you can make money at that, that's probably time to be locking those in.
All right. Speaking of locking in, I'm going to lock in my thank you now. That's Dan Huber. Thank you for the time. Matt Bennett, thank you as well. We'll continue this discussion in just a moment. All right, and that will do it for this installment of the TV show we call Market to Market. We will talk more in Market Plus, so join us then. You can find it on our website at markettomarket.org. You can't always hit pause and rewind life, but you can do that for this program. Watch all of our videos via our YouTube channel. Subscribe and click on that little bell to get notifications when we post new content. Next week, we'll see how one exhibitor is overcoming obstacles in the show ring. Until then, thanks for watching and have a great week.